The rug was pulled out from underneath her. She didn't feel confident. She didn't know if she could make it. Yet she rose like the phoenix, leading herself and her family to a new beginning. And you can too. Are you ready? The Cornelia Stephanie Show, Lady Boss, knows what women want to be free, to speak their voice, live in financial freedom, and build businesses that radiate wealth, leaving legacies we can be proud of. Join Cornelia, Dana, and Diane the first and fourth Friday every month as they raise the roof to inspire confidence in all women.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Cornelia Stephanie Show. I'm with my beautiful, beautiful co-host, Dana Terrio. Welcome, Dana.
Hi, Cornelia.
It's wonderful to be here with you. I am so excited about today's show because we have an amazing superstar guest that's here with us today. But before we get started, I just want to say, are you so overwhelmed with gratitude like I am?
I'm overflowing with gratitude. So overflowing.
Overflowing, overwhelmed. And we want to talk a little bit about gratitude because our number one success coach, Jack Canfield, says that when you are in a state of gratitude, you are in your natural abundance. And this is the perfect way to be present in this present moment and then also roll out the show. I'm so excited because you and I have been manifesting this show for the last 6 months. We've been manifesting this show using the law of attraction principles that our number one success coach teaches. And I want to talk a little bit about how we came to be, how that show came to be. Do you remember?
Yes. Well, I want to thank you and honor you, Cornelia, because you poached me when I was in this long, you know, dream incubation period. We had met a while ago. I didn't feel ready. And it, like Jack says, it just takes one person, one choice to make a difference. And you really, you know, ushered me in, held my hand. And so it looks like this is all just appearing, but really we've been planting the seeds behind the scenes for this harvest right now. So this has been a long time happening.
Yes. And I remember when you were in Mexico, you were with Jack Canfield and you had texted me and said, I'm with Jack Canfield in Mexico. You know, you were doing your book review. You were writing your book with your book coach. And I said to you, I said, well, you have to get Jack on the show. And you said, well, I can't do that. There's too many people around him. I can't do it. And I said, Dana. I said, everything happens energetically first. So let us move into the dreaming big because we are dreaming big. We're making our dreams come true. This is what we're doing with this whole podcasting world and online world and what we're doing in the world, influencing people into their true abundance. And you said, okay, I'm ready to play big. And then you said, let's role play. So we role played the scenario. That's how it played out. And then next thing you know, you texted me and you said, I did it.
Well, yeah. And a little correction. I was actually with my publisher in Mexico. Then I was at a training with Jack in August with my publisher too. So that part is true. And yeah, that's pretty much how it happened. And here we are. Yeah. I just want to say Jack is really doing me a solid. You know how they say we hang with the aspirational people, then we hang with our peers, and then the people that we coach and we lift? Jack is a sought-after speaker. And I know that he is so, so kind and so humble and so generous. And I just really am grateful that he's here with us because he could be anywhere in the world at this holiday season. And he's here with us. So I'm really grateful.
I'm so grateful too, because this was another manifestation because we didn't realize until 2 weeks ago that Jack was coming on. All of a sudden when we got the email, we didn't even have any more shows lined up because all the shows for this year had already been played out. We have Dr. Christiane Northrup coming up this Friday. And so all the spots were already filled, but we moved heaven on earth in order to make this happen. And that's why this is another so, so exciting full circle for both you and for me as well. So I'm so grateful And before we go on, I just want to say, you know, I experienced, as you know, Dana, a hit and run accident. I was in a hit and run accident the other day. And I was so shaken up that, you know, my car was damaged. The gratitude I feel for my life and that I'm here and that I didn't get hurt and that I'm able to facilitate this call and be part of this magnificent experience here on Earth. It's just another huge gratitude moment for me. So thank you so much for all of you. Thank you, Jack. And I want to hear about, you're going to introduce us to Jack.
Yeah, I want to say I'm so grateful that you're okay. And Jack teaches too that to attract more abundance, to be in a state of gratitude. I'm in Florida here with my daughter, and she's been, as they say in the theater, she's been bitten by the bug, with a performing arts bug. So it wasn't ideal time to line it up to think that, oh, but you know what? Jack teaches us that we have to be ready to receive. So we're making it work. And here you are, you know, you just came back from Hawaii. You just got out of this hit and run accident. So we're just so grateful. So I think it's a sweet setup to talk about the gratitude. And Jack, we're going to introduce you. You need no introduction, but just to give a bit of backstory. So Jack Canfield, known as America's number one success coach, is best-selling author, professional speaker, trainer, and entrepreneur. He is the founder and CEO of the Canfield Training Group, which trains entrepreneurs, educators, corporate leaders, and motivational individuals how to accelerate the achievement of their personal and professional goals. He has conducted live trainings for more than a million people in more than 50 countries around the world. He holds two Guinness World Record titles and is a member of the National Speakers Association Speaker Hall of Fame. Jack is the co-author of more than 200 books, including The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be, The Success Principles for Teens, Tapping into Ultimate Success, Coaching for Breakthrough Success, The Success Secret, The Power of Focus, The Aladdin Factor, which was a game changer for me in the wilderness as a fresh university grad, and Jack Canfield's Key to Living the Law of Attraction. And of course, the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, which includes 40 New York Times bestsellers and has sold more than 500 million copies in 47 languages around the world. Jack is a featured teacher in the movie The Secret and has appeared on more than 1,000 radio and television shows, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, The Today Show, Fox and Friends, Larry King Live, and the NBC Nightly News and the CBC Evening News. Jack is also the founder and chairman of the board of the Transformational Leadership Council, an international organization of the top transformational leaders in the world. There you have it. That is Sir Jack Canfield, as I like to say. As Jack says, he's been knighted. So welcome to the program, Jack. We're so grateful to have you here. And I know Cornelia has been a longtime fan too. So I'd like to give Cornelia a chance to share her story on all things Jack Canfield in Cornelia's world.
Welcome to the show, Jack. You know, this is like a full circle moment for me also, because I first heard about you, not from the Chicken Soup of the Soul series, but through influencers that I was involved in with when I first left the corporate world. And that was Janet and Chris Atwood, when I became a passion test facilitator with Janet and Chris. And that is how I fell in love with Jack Canfield through Janet and Chris, because you were our household name. You know, we talked about you all the time, you know, in our passion test certifications for discovering our passions. And so that was my first introduction to you, and it was so great. And then over the years, I've met so many more people that, like, for instance, I've had Martin Root, one of your beloved friends, had him on the show here on the Cornelia Stephanie Show with his Heaven on Earth project. And so many people sing your praises, and everyone says this one thing about you, Jack, and that is how absolutely kind you are. It's a common thread with all the people that you know, sing your praises and that know of you, is that you have spread your kindness, this universal principle of kindness, the cell being of who you are. That is what all people seem to have experienced with you. And so for me, it's a full circle moment, you know, ending this decade, beginning this brand new decade at this special moment in time, full homecoming with Jack Canfield. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for all these kind words. I'm going to have to send out a shorter introduction. Half the show was the introduction. But thank you for all that. I appreciate it. It makes me feel good.
Good, good. All right. So Dana, why don't you go ahead and start talking to Jack about some of those beautiful questions that we formulated.
I will do that. I wanted to say the kickoff of the opening ceremonies here for the performing arts program here at Disney World with my daughter, they had a celebrity come out and share with the kids that the number one takeaway was to be kind to others and be kind to yourself, because if you are not kind to yourself, you are either not going to make it or not have a good time. And that just speaks to the platform that Jack has, that with that song, Humble and Kind, that's what I think of with Jack. So
I'm glad you shared that you're at this. I wonder what the Mickey Mouse ears now, they make sense.
Yeah. In the spirit of play too. Yeah. And Disney World is right here. It's great. So
very good.
Jack, I know that you were a featured teacher in The Secret, and so much has happened with so much time that's passed since it was originally released. Would you please share with us, Jack, what has evolved? What have you learned and discovered since the original release, and what truth has remained timeless?
Well, I'll start in reverse order. I think the thing that's remained timeless and that I really appreciate more fully is obviously you have to be clear about what you want, and you have to eliminate the limiting beliefs, the self-doubt, the contradictory statements. You know, it's like calling up Domino's Pizza and saying, you know, please give me a pizza. And they ask you what kind, you tell them exactly what you want. And just imagine if you were to call them up 2 minutes later and say, are you really going to deliver a pizza? I mean, am I worthy of a pizza? Maybe I shouldn't be eating pizza. I don't know. Now, if you did that for about 5 days in a row, you'd be on their don't pick up the phone list. And a lot of people do that. But I think most importantly, what I've learned is that you have to be in a high vibration state. The more you're in a high vibration state, the more your attractor power. It's like being a 50,000 watt radio station as opposed to a 10,000 watt radio station. You know, when I was living in West Virginia as a kid, I could tune in stations from China sometimes because they were such powerful stations. They would bounce off the ionosphere and come back into the earth. So I think that when we say high vibration, we're talking about being in a state of joy, being in a state of gratitude, being in a state of appreciation, being happy generally. And so many people are not. And I think that, you know, we are constantly being bombarded with negative news. There's so much criticism in the world. We have a very polarized country in America and around the world as well. You know, we have a lot of progressives and a lot of people holding on to the old ways and a lot of clashing that's going on there. And, you know, you watch the news, you get either angry or depressed and so forth. There are certain people in your life that can, you know, push your buttons, especially around the holidays and so forth. So I think that learning to stay in that high vibration, and things that do that are like meditation, forgiveness, having a gratitude practice. You know, I take several minutes every day at the end of my meditation and I focus on what I'm grateful for. Sometimes I do what's called a rampage of appreciation, which is something I teach in my seminars, which I learned from Abraham and Mr. Hicks, where you literally walk around the room or the property and you just notice everything you're grateful for. Like, I'm grateful for this computer, which allows me to see you and talk to you. I'm grateful for the internet, which allows thousands of people, if not tens of thousands, to hear this podcast. I'm grateful for the person that invented this microphone so I can sound really brilliant, like I'm an FM radio announcer instead of a kid going through puberty, you know? So all of these things that we take for granted, the water, the fresh air, the quiet, the palm trees outside my house, etc., it gets me into a very high vibration. And I think it's important that we surround ourselves with other people that are in that same space, whether it's in person, whether it's listening to a podcast like this, whether it's watching a TED Talk, watching a movie that we know will uplift us because it's, you know, a romantic comedy, something like that, reading high inspirational literature, whether it's a self-help book or a book of poetry, you know, listening to music with positive lyrics. So many of the lyrics, you know, I love country music, but, you know, the old saw is that what do you get when you listen to a country music song backwards? You get your house back, your wife back, your dog back, your truck back, you get out of prison, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we have to be really careful and conscious, full of care, but not care like worrying, but conscious, full of consciousness about what we allow to come into our ears and our eyes so that we keep our vibration in a high level. I think one other thing I've learned that's new that I think is critical is that a lot of times people are doing this work, whether it's law of attraction work or just success work or whatever, and they get impatient. They think, why don't I have that already? You know, I've been working on this for 6 months. I've only lost 5 pounds, or I've been working on this. I'm still not a billionaire, or my book's not done, or whatever it might be. And the minute you go into impatience, you are focusing on the lack of something. You're focusing on the not having of it. And I only learned that concept a few years ago, and it was radical to me because I'm a very, you know, type A, get it done, move it forward. I'm a 3 on the Enneagram, if any of you know what that is, you know, achievement-oriented person. And the reality is that I would get impatient. You know, come on, I've been doing this, let's go. But when I was impatient, I was focusing on not having it. So I had to stop doing that and then focus on visualizing having it, affirming having it, acting as if it was already present in my life. And that really accelerated moving things into my world of manifestation way beyond what I was getting before. So I think that that's another little piece I've learned. I think the biggest challenge for most people is limiting beliefs they don't know they have. And as you know, Dana, in our seminars, we do a couple of processes to identify limiting beliefs that happen due to events between the ages of 3, usually, and 8 years old, where there's some kind of trauma or rejection or hurt, where as little children, we made a decision, like, I'm not worthy. It's not worthy to ask for what, doesn't make any sense to ask for what I want and never get it anyway. I'm not smart. I'm not musical. I'm not athletic. You know, some decision like that, that is still running us as an adult. And as I told you, that if you're getting on a plane and you see a pilot coming on, and he's 6 years old, and he walks into the cockpit and sits down in the pilot seat, you'd probably be a little nervous. There's a 6-year-old running the plane. And yet many of us are walking around with a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old running our life. And we don't realize that these, and the sad thing is the beliefs are subconscious. We're not even aware we have them. So, you know, there's a number of different techniques now where you can actually go back and surface these limiting beliefs and then replace them with positive beliefs that then everything starts to just open up. I'll just give you a quick story. I was in Costa Rica recently in a workshop, and I got in touch with something that happened when I was 10 years old. And my dad wanted me to go to this picnic with the family. And I didn't want to go because all the adults just drank and they got drunk and the kids, you know, didn't know what to do because it wasn't organized play. And it was a movie I wanted to go see. It was a Saturday. So I went and I did some errands for some adults in the community and I earned enough money to go to the movie. So I go to the movie and I hear outside, about halfway into the movie, I hear, well, Jack Canfield, please report to the box office. And I go, oh, no. So there was an exit door on the front right of the theater. I figured I'll sneak out there. My dad won't catch me. And of course, I opened that door and there's my dad. He figured I would do that. But he took me home and he literally beat the crap out of my butt with a long hairbrush, the back of it. And I refused to cry. It's like I was not going to give him the satisfaction of watching me cry. But what I didn't realize until just in this last month when I did this workshop down there, that I had shut down my crying for over 60 years. I mean, I would cry at a movie if it was a movie, but I would not cry like my mother died. I didn't cry. I didn't cry for the loss of my own innocence when I was doing some therapy work. And when I finally realized I had decided it's not okay to cry, and I re-owned that it's okay to cry. In fact, I realized I couldn't be intimate with my wife at the level emotionally, which is I couldn't share the feelings I was really feeling and the empathy I really needed to have. And that's totally changed. In the last 3 weeks, my life and our emotional intimacy is like 100 times better. And I had no idea that was running me. And so we all have those. And so it's really important to identify what are the limiting beliefs It's not okay. Money's not okay to have. You can't be spiritual and have money, you know, whatever it might be. And unfortunately, that is one of the things that's stopping most people from manifesting, even though they're doing a lot of the other stuff, the affirmations, the visualization. But there's this underlying negative blockage that's stopping the waveform of your desire going out and being manifested back. I know it was a long answer, but I hope that was useful.
Yeah, it sure was. Thank you. And it's all subconscious. And I know because of this retreat that you went to in Costa Rica, you started a new Break Free series. Yes. You have an invitation for people in January. So I signed up for that today. Thank you. It's all subconscious. And you know what I love about you, Jack, is that would you like to share with us how old you are? How many candles on your cake this year?
75. I'll be 76 the coming August. Yeah.
75 wow. years. And you're still going to these training retreats. You're still evolving, still always going to optimize your human potential. That's really admirable. I mean, I've always appreciated your great body of work. And I admire you as a human being, just the way you live your life. You're still going. And we both have a love of books, but I've heard you say before that in addition to the books, going to live events really makes the difference.
Well, I've actually said if I had to live my life over, I think I've read over 3,000 books. I counted them up one day just going through my library for being obsessive compulsive, I guess, but I did it. And I think if I'd read 1,000 books and taken more seminars, I'd been better off. Like I learn best when I'm in a context of other people and I see it done and I'm experiencing it and you're experiencing it. And one of the things that was talked about in the movie, The Secret, is the power of an intention is the number of people holding the same intention at the same time squared. So if you and I are holding an intention, the power of that is 4. If the 3 of us are holding the intention, it's 9. If 100, it's 10,000. So by being in a live workshop where everyone is focusing on the same thing, it's much more powerful than just working by yourself alone. It can still be useful, obviously. But I think it's, for me, I think I would have liked to have done more seminars, more trainings, more workshops, and maybe read less. Because if you ever had this experience, you find a book you read maybe 5 years ago, you open it up, you see all these things are underlined in marginal notes, you can't remember any of it. You go, my God, I read that, I forgot all that. Which is why I also say, if you read a book, I'm going to put this in my next book. The first page is going to say, don't read this book. That's all it's going to say. Then the next page is going to say, don't read it, study it. And what the point is, we've all read a book and forgotten it, but if you study it, and my mentor, W. Clement Stone, taught me years ago, read a book 6 times. You know, Bob Proctor reads The Secret, and he reads Think and Grow Rich, and Wallace Waddle's book on the Science of Getting Rich. He reads those every January. He's been doing that Bob's in his 80s. He's been doing that for probably 50 years. So he knows that stuff cold. And so that's what I recommend. If you are going to read what you read and then study what you felt was important so you reinforce it over time.
So basically what you're saying is to embody the book.
That's
embody the book, become the book, right?
Yes, if you could eat it and digest it, that would be perfect, but it doesn't work like that. But yes, you literally need to, you know, I have this, it's a funny phrase I came up with, like if you just read a book and put it on the shelf, you end up with shelf esteem. What you want to do is put what you've learned into practice so you actually do it. I think Ben Franklin said once, if you read a book and you only get one good idea, but you actually do it, that was worth reading the book. So the idea is put what you're learning into practice. You have to assimilate it, integrate it, and then, you know, outsource it through action.
That's right. And they say that when we read a book again and we revisit all the underlying parts, it's not that there are new insights or revelations in the book, but each time we come back for the second and third, fourth, sixth read through, we're different. We're different people.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes I'll read a book the second time and I'll underline new things that I didn't underline the first time because the new me needed to hear that. You know, I went to graduate school, the School of Education at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, Massachusetts. And there was a man named Ram Dass, who's a spiritual teacher. He came and he spoke there and he said something I thought was powerful. He talked for like 3 hours nonstop, no bathroom break or anything. And he said, at some point tonight, I'm going to say something that you came to hear. Anything when you hear that, feel free to leave because that's what you came to hear. And I realized about 4/5 of the way through, he said something that rocked my world. That's all I could think about. I actually did leave. And I realized that's what I came to hear. Now, had I come back 2 years later to that same talk, I probably would have heard something else that I need to hear in that moment in time.
And I bet there's a lot of us that are here on this podcast today that are hearing exactly what it is that we need to hear right now for, you know, for whatever it is, for whatever right. it is that you're talking about. One of the quotes that I love of yours, Jack, is that you're not given a dream unless you have the capacity to fulfill it, right? That's one of your quotes.
And I fully believe that. I've never met anyone that had a desire or a dream that didn't have the ability. Now, they may needed to have studied something. They may needed to have partnered up with somebody. They may needed to go back to school and develop some new skill sets or whatever. But, you know, I don't believe that what do we call it, God, universe, source, intelligence, you know, puts something in you as a desire for either expression or to manifest in terms of having it, that you don't have the capacity to do it. And we actually now know that there are people that can't carry a tomb, but they can actually learn to do that. There's research on that now. Everybody can learn to carry a tune. Everybody can learn to sing. My wife just finished, literally a week ago, something called The Songwriter's Journey. Two cool guys called the Brothers Coren. They're amazing. And they take people through this songwriting journey, and then they have to perform the song at a concert. So there were seven women who went through it. I got to go to the concert a couple weekends ago. And every one of them made me cry, because they had to write a song about something significant that had happened in their life, some wound, some overcoming obstacle. And my wife took a singing course a couple years ago. She's always doing like an improv course, a painting class, a whatever, acting class, just to stretch herself. And she wasn't that good a singer. And she sounded like a little girl singing. And this time, after this was a 6-month course of lots of video work, like on a Zoom call like this. And then they had 3 days at the end where they worked really intensely. She was amazing. She was like this grown up singer. And I would have, you know, as much as I said what I believe that quote, I'm not sure I would have predicted that, but she did. And so I'm just saying that if my wife could do that, pretty much anybody can do anything. And I've watched people that weren't good dancers learn to dance. I've watched people that said they could never learn a second language become fluent in a second language. It depends on the right instruction. You have to have a good, you know, they say, there's a wonderful quote that says, it's faster when you're working with a master. And so, you know, if you have a master life coach or a master musician, a master acting coach, whatever, you're going to get there faster. It's simply a matter of putting yourself in the right place to get the tutelage and the support, the encouragement, the love, and maybe the breakthrough of the limiting beliefs that you need in order to get to where you want to go.
Wonderful. It's beautiful. I want to show you something, Jack, that sure. That I have. Does this,
oh, yeah.
Does this look familiar?
Yeah, it's a vision board.
Yes. And now look at that.
All right. Very good.
Isn't that beautiful? This is one of your vision boards.
Yes.
From your Dream Big and your gratitude journal, mm-hmm. that this one right here, mm-hmm. and that I absolutely love. It's helped me so much. And so I just absolutely love the success principles that you teach and talk about. So as far as going further into your 75th year, what are you looking forward to, your success principles now? What does success mean as far as abundance and creation? What are you looking forward to create now?
Well, I don't ever plan to retire. So it doesn't matter if I'm 75 or 95, I'll keep on working because I love what I do. My wife keeps saying, you got enough money, why not retire? I do what? Play golf? And I don't find that interesting. But so right now I'm working on finishing 3 books. One's called Living the Success Principles. They're all stories of people who read the book or took one of my seminars and then had extraordinary breakthroughs in their life. Like there's a woman named Heather O'Brien Walker. She literally learned how to apply visualization and affirmations to her life. And she had a major traumatic brain injury. She was running a kind of like a multi-level marketing cosmetics company. And someone left a box on the floor in the warehouse and she tripped over it and she hit her head on a metal cabinet or shelf on the way down. Then she hit the floor and her head hit again. She was out conscious. When they found her, they took her to the hospital. They had brain damage. The doctor said, you'll probably never walk again normally. You may not talk again normally. And her boyfriend reminded her about the visualization and affirmation from the book, The Success Principles. and also The Secret. And so she started visualizing walking, and she walked out of the hospital several months later, blew everyone's mind. Now, the sad thing was that about 2 weeks after that, she was in an automobile accident where this car slammed the side. She was in a passenger. Her head went up against the passenger window. Second traumatic brain injury, back in the hospital. Doctor said, now it's for sure you're not going to walk. She started visualizing walking down the aisle because she was engaged to this man who was reminding her to do this. And literally, I have a picture of her in the sand. I think it was in Santa Monica, walking on the beach to her, you know, up to the altar to get married. And I always tell everyone, her last name is Walker. You should have known, Heather Walker, you know. But so there's like stories like that. There was a guy who was he and his wife could not get a baby. You know, they went to every fertility thing you could possibly do. Nothing happened. And so finally he realized, he was reading my book again, and it said, take 100% responsibility for everything. He was blaming everybody, God, the universe, the doctors, his wife, whatever. And he said, have I really done everything? He said, I remember once reading that if you are overweight, your sperm count could go down. So he lost 60 pounds. And I have a picture of him holding his baby, you know. So the book is full of stories like that, which are really fun. And then I'm writing a book on getting unstuck, like it's a process for unpacking these limiting beliefs. And that's going to come out probably in about a year. And I'm writing a book called The Power of Wow. How do we create wow experiences for our clients and customers? And it's really amazing the stories we found where people, when they do that, you know, you're more abundant, everything works a lot better, people talk about you, et cetera. So that's that part of my life. I'm also have a goal to train 1 million trainers to teach the success principles work by the year 2030. So right now we're about 4 years into this process, and I'm now beginning to identify people I want to train to be trainers of trainers. Because I can't do all the training. There's just too many people out there in the world. So I want to have a trainer in India, one in China, one in Japan, one in every country. And so that is one of my huge goals. And then we're also working to get the success principles into schools. We have several charter schools that are now based on the success principles. The kids are learning these principles every day as part of their curriculum. And so we're developing a curriculum that can go nationwide, and we're getting that out. We're raising money from foundations and so forth. So that's a huge goal, because I started out my career as a high school teacher, and I became more interested in why kids weren't motivated to learn than I was in teaching history. And that's what originally got me into this. So that's me coming full circle back to wanting to make that difference in the world.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love what you're sharing. I definitely want to hear more information about becoming one of your success coach facilitators. I'd love to hear about that. So
Great. Definitely.
And could you give us some information of where we can go to the website and sign up?
Sure. So we have two programs right now. One's called Train the Trainer. It's a live program. It starts in April of this coming year. And then there's a week-long training, 7-day training. And then there's lots of calls and online stuff in between. And then a week in November, I believe it is. I think there's only about 10 spaces left in that one for 2020. And then we have a Train the Trainer online program, which you can start anytime and you can finish it as fast as in a week. You can take a month or you can take a year to finish it. It doesn't really matter. You just have to go through all the modules, and then there's a little test at the end just to prove you did it. And then you get certified as a Canfield Success Principles Trainer. If you come to the live version, you get certified as a Canfield Methodology Trainer. You're just better trained because you're live. You get lots of feedback. And so now then the next thing we'll be developing out of that category of people are the senior trainers who will be training trainers of trainers. So all that's available. You go to www.jackcanfield.com, and there will be buttons across the top. You just hit the one that says trainings or events, and it'll take you to both of those.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that.
No, thank you for asking.
Yes. All right, Dana. What do you got? What else do you got? I know you've got some amazing questions.
Well, I did get the t-shirt. I got the t-shirt. I'm one in a million. So I look forward to going on and completing that training too. And this is the book here. This is a wonderful book. And Brian Tracy talks about it, I believe, application orientation. So if we don't apply it, then it just becomes as Jack says, the shelf esteem. So we've got to take action towards it. You shared some nice success stories. I mean, our series is called Handle the Lump, Heal Your Life. So it's about handling the lumps and bumps of life. And like you say, I don't want to hang with the Ain't an Awful Club. I just, you know, on a healing journey, I wanted to hang with some positive people. That's why I so enjoyed all your mastermind people, because, you know, your vibe attracts your tribe. What would you say, Jack, for anyone on a healing journey to apply?
You just gave me a new quote. I never heard that. Your vibe attracts your tribe. Thank you for that.
That can't be new to you. That's a rinse.
I never heard that before. But what I love about those kind of things, you know, is that they capture so much in a sentence, and because they rhyme, the brain remembers them.
Go ahead and write it down, Jack.
I'm going to do that. Vibe attracts your tribe.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that too, Dana.
Anyway. But you can write this one down too. This one is mine from my book. It's all universal. Everything is, nothing's personal. It's all vibrational. So something like that.
Very good. But, I like that. Yeah. All right. Anyway, I interrupted you. I'm sorry about that.
No, not at all. You gave us some great illustrations on people that were healing, and the lady walker that was walking for her wedding. So more on the human potential for human health. Is there any one takeaway that you would recommend for someone who's really trying to heal right now? Would you say visualization is the go-to?
Well, here's the deal. People ask me this all the time. If there was one principle, what's the most important principle? If there was one thing you could leave us with. And that's like me asking you, if we could only keep one organ in your body, which one would you keep?
True.
You know, and you might say your heart, but then without your liver, your lungs, your kidney, it would not work. So what I really teach, Dana, is a system of things that when they all done together produce the results. So if you're focusing on health, the first thing you have to do is, number one, believe that health is possible. A lot of times people give up. They think they can't get healthy again. They're too far gone. Their cancer is too developed, whatever it might be. I'm too overweight. It would take forever to lose 200 pounds, you know. So the first thing is to believe it's possible, and then to have a clear goal. What is my goal? What does health mean for me? Most of us in North America, health means not feeling bad, but it doesn't mean feeling good. Most of us don't even remember what healthy felt like, because when you're totally dynamically, you can't wait to jump out of bed in the morning, your body's zinging. You know, there's a kind of a feeling I get after working out in the gym where I've been lifting weights and doing aerobics and all that, and my whole body's vibrating, you know? And so that's what we want. What is the definition of health? Is it just I'm cancer free? Is it I'm able to move? Is it the inflammation in my hands is gone? You know, what does it mean for you? Get really clear about that. And then I think you have to apply several success principles. Number one, visualize what it would look like if you were healthy. Affirm, I am totally happy, healthy, and holy. I like the three H's, you know, happy, healthy, and holy right now in every aspect of my life. Or, you know, I am able to run upstairs happily because my legs no longer hurt, you know, that kind of thing. Then you got to do what I call, what are the actions? What is the action plan that's going to get you there? Without an action plan, you're just sitting there, nothing's going on. You know, what is your diet going to look like? How much water are you drinking? Most people need to drink anywhere 8 to 12 glasses a day. Most people don't. Wonderful book called You're Dying of Thirst, which means a lot of us are underhydrated and we can't get the cleansing we need. The cellular waste isn't coming out. The nutrients aren't getting through the cell wall, etc. Are you doing an alkaline diet? You know, or should you be on a keto diet? You know, or should you be on a different kind of diets? I'm not thinking all of them right now, the names of them, but the point being, what's your nutritional program? Most people should be taking supplements, and they're not, because our food's denatured. Even if you go to Whole Foods and buy organic food, often the soil is not getting the nutrients it needs, so we're not getting the vitamins and minerals that we should have. And then you got to look at a lot of other stuff. I teach this thing called the rule of five. What are five things you can do every day? So let's say my goal was lose weight and detoxify. Well, I could sit in a sauna. That's one thing I could do, infrared sauna. I could go, anything that'll make me sweat, you know, doing aerobics, running, doing high intensity interval training. How much water am I going to drink? You know, what supplements am I going to take? Am I going to meditate to lower the negative hormones and things that are running around my body, you know, because of the stress. And so there's all of that. And then, you know, one of the things that most people don't realize, we're living in an electromagnetic field. So we have all these EMFs. You know, right now there's Wi-Fi in my office, which is not great for me. But I wear this thing around my neck that basically increases my body's own magnetic field. So it basically offsets a lot of that. And so there's so many things to pay attention to. And a lot of times people say, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know there are 41 carcinogens in most over-the-counter lipsticks. Well, you need to educate yourself, you know. I didn't know there are toxins in my dry cleaning that are off-gassing into my body. Yeah. You know, I didn't know all the cleaning solutions I was using in my house were creating toxic impact, you know, the carpeting, the couch. So we have to educate ourselves. So I don't think there's one final thing, but you have to, once you have an action plan, I think you need to have an accountability partner, because it's hard to get up every morning and exercise. It's hard to give up the sugar. It's hard to give up the bread if you've been eating, you know, gluten your whole life, but maybe that gluten's creating an allergic reaction in your body. So the idea that I know that you're out there, you're going to meet me at 6 a.m. and we're going to go for a run, that's great. Or you're going to call me and say, did you go for the run? And I have to tell you the truth. So knowing that, scorekeeping. There's a whole chapter in my book on scorekeeping for success. So the idea is, how many times am I going to exercise? I check that off every day. I want those calendar to have all those check marks on it as we go across. So I'm keeping score. Keeping score of my cholesterol level, my weight, you know, how many reps did I do in the gym with my, you know, arm lifts, whatever. So that's an important part of it. And I think listening to your intuition, because sometimes your intuition will say, maybe you shouldn't lift weights today. Maybe give it a break, you know. And you learn to learn what's the lazy voice versus your high conscious intuition. But there are times when a prescription isn't the thing you need to be doing. You need to be listening to the inside. And then I think, finally, perseverance. Just never, ever give up. You know, one of the things I've learned about any kind of health regime or fitness regime is you immediately get a real big bump, and then it flattens out. And you're exercising and you're not losing weight, or you're doing this and nothing's happening. You're practicing a piano and you're not getting any better. But if you keep doing it, then there'll be another bump, and then that'll level off, and then another bump, and that'll level off. And so many people, instead of knowing that, because they don't understand how growth occurs, they quit when that leveling off occurs. Or they say, well, I picked the wrong exercise. I'm going to do yoga instead of Pilates, or I'm going to do Pilates instead of, you know, aerobics or whatever. And they never really sustain anything long enough to get the full impact. So again, that's a long answer, but I think you have to pay attention to all of that if you're really going to have a healing effect. So you can take the Success Principles book and apply those principles in order to anything, whether it's losing weight, getting rid of a disease you don't want, getting rid of your inflammation, being able to run a 10K, and it will work.
Yes, thank you. You're right. And in this wonderful book, you talk about, really, it's the power of sequence. And at some of your live trainings, some of the participants have shared how they have gone through chronic illness or disease by following the principles. So what you mentioned that really works, the power of five. I really like that. There's no going to bed unless we check off these five things.
Right.
And the two things that I like are the visualization in the morning and before bed. Sometimes I just have a hard time just to get the motor going, and I just visualize, and it really helped me with the writing of my book. I just imagined myself on the other side. It fuels the feelings, as you say. It really does help.
Well, two things for people who are listening or watching is this. A lot of people don't visualize correctly. And when you're visualizing, a couple of things are important. You want to visualize what you would see out of your eyes. So don't see you out there running. See your feet going along the path, see the birds, see people running next to you, see the tape being broken as you cross the finish line, see your image in the mirror, look down, see your weight on the scale. So you're coming from inside out. Hear the sounds you would hear, your feet on the pad, people saying, God, you look great. Your doctor saying, hey, you're you know, cancer free, whatever it might be. And then also, what would you feel? This is what you just said. Feel the feelings you'd feel if you'd already achieved it. Most people leave that part out. And that is really the most important part, is the feelings. Again, the high vibration. So And then adding to that, the affirmation, what words would be that go along with that? So now you have auditory, visual, and the feelings kinesthetic, all three modalities working in harmony with each other.
That's beautiful. Right. That's beautiful. Jack, do you feel that this is the part, the feeling part that you just talked about? Do you feel that that was a part that was possibly missing in The Secret?
I think it was touched upon, but not emphasized enough. And I think that, you know, I often say that the metaphor would be that your goal is the destination you want to get to. The affirmation and the visualization is like the car that's going to get you there. But the feeling is the fuel that's in the car, whether it's electricity or whether it's gas or whether it's, you know, biofuel, whatever. Without that, the car will not move. And so the emotions are really the highest level part. I know people that just live in a very high state of vibration. I mean, like Buddhist monks and stuff, they want for nothing. Everything just flows into their life. You know, people go, well, aren't they lucky? No, they're not lucky. They literally almost just think there's something they want and it manifests because they live in that vibration that's so high that the universe is just responding to them without any interference. And I think for most people in the West, there's just a lot of negative feelings that they have. They're not even aware they're having them. You know, there's road rage all the time. There's people get upset with what they see on the news. People are irritated because we're overcrowded. There's research. You put so many deer on an island, if it reaches a certain point, they start nipping at each other, and eventually they'll kill each other. And we are overpopulating our cities. And we see all the stress that goes on, you know, where people are just yelling at each other and shoving each other. And we get these murders and these mass murders and so forth. So I think it's important to make sure that you can either get into a quiet space like you seem to be in as you're sitting in your home there, or you can create a space around you by meditation, by creating a bubble. Like I will often visualize myself surrounded by a large bubble of white light. Or golden light, either one. And so everything that's negative is kind of bouncing off of me. And so I can do that even being on a crowded subway in New York.
Yes, yes. And do you also feel that the, you know, you talked earlier about the level of intimacy that you have now with your wife, and thank you for being so authentic with that, and how you gave yourself permission to cry. Do you feel that that is a lot of the problems that men have
in
the world with not feeling their feelings, not having that permission to cry or that emotional intimacy, which then of course, you know, creates distance in relationships.
Sure. Right? I think two things are at play there. Number one, men have been conditioned to tough it up, suck it up, gut it out. You know, I can remember I was playing football and I really injured my leg and my coach said to me, well, how far is your knee from your heart? And I said, I don't know, 3 feet. He said, great, that's far enough. Go back in the game. You know, I'm thinking, geez, I'm wounded here, you know. And so it was not okay to be hurt. It was not okay to be weak. You know, we call kids wussies and pussies and all that kind of stuff. And the reality is that we've been trained not to cry. My dad used to say, if you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to really cry about. Mm. I heard that as well as like, you know, deciding one day I'm not going to cry just because I didn't want him to see that. And I think, you know, in the Marine Corps, they have this phrase called wetsu, W-E-T-S-U, means we eat this shit up. Here you are, you're suffering. You haven't slept for 72 hours. You're carrying logs like in basic SEAL training. And you're just telling yourself, no big deal. Well, it is a big deal. And so we have been taught to abuse our bodies and not share our feelings, not have the feelings, repress them. Mm-hmm. Now, women have been taught not to express their anger. You know, that makes you a bitch. So the reality is it goes on both sides. But I think for men, the other thing that's true is that we have, actually, this is true, this is biological, we have fewer connectors between the emotional feeling center and the expression, the verbal expression center. Women have more neural network that goes between those two. So women can talk about the feelings they have much easier than men. And so I think that's also just biologically built in. And therefore what happens when women start to share their feelings instead of men listening empathically and just saying, oh, that's terrible, dear, tell me more. They start to try to solve the problem because men have been taught to fix it. you know, make it better, fix the sink, fix the dishwasher, you know, carry in the groceries, fix the lawn, you know, whatever. And I think that that conditioning is part of what we think we're supposed to do. And I think John Gray and Men Are From Mars and some of the other people are out there have made it really clear that women and men process their emotions differently. Men tend to go off in their cave and feel the feelings and then think about it and sort it out. And then they'll come back with a summary statement. You know, we were talking about moving. I think we should. And you're going, well, wait a second. How did you get there? You know, women want to talk about it. Well, if we move her into this, the kids will lose that and they won't be in the football team and she won't get to be in a cheerleading squad. And you know, all that you're talking about it. And eventually you come to the point, whereas men go off and they come back and they figure it out and they just tell you the bottom line. And you're going, wait a second, I want more. So it's kind of built into the way we process, but men need to learn to share more, to be more vulnerable. And to, you know, it is vulnerable for men. And women need to, this is the other thing. My wife used to say, you don't share enough. And then I'd share something and then she'd get mad at me for feeling that. You know, I said, well, great. And that makes me want to share things. So when men do share things, I think women or other men need to like basically hear it and not like pounce on it right away. You know, because I know that for me was challenging. But I think intimacy, I love the phrase, into me, I see. You know, the more self-disclosure we have, the more self-awareness we have, the greater the intimacy that occurs. And women are hungering for that in today's world. It's just not there. And I'll share this. I was just with my son. This is, you know, we're doing this with the holidays. You've got the tree behind you there. And my son came back from college. And he said, I told him about my breakthrough, about crying and everything. And I apologized to him. I said, you know, you used to watch this TV show called Real World. And I said, there was nothing real about it. There were these kids in their 20s living in this apartment, like a hotel in Vegas, all paid for, partying at night, no responsibility. There's nothing real about that. And I remember he said to me, but Dad, they talk about their feelings. I love them. Hear them talk about their feelings. And I dismissed that as unimportant. And I realize now he was telling me, I need to hear about feelings. I need to talk. And I wasn't there for him that way. And we shared that just literally 2 days ago. And we had a little breakthrough, a little healing occurred as a result of that.
That's a sweet story. Thanks for sharing that, Jack. And it's funny because I think of you as always leading with heart and humility and authenticity and transparency. You always say, be transparent, tell the truth and tell the truth faster. So
I believe that, but if you're not aware of the truth at a deeper level, see, I think Gerald Ford as a president was very transparent, but he was not very self-aware. So when he shared, it wasn't a profound sharing. Whereas other presidents we've had who were more in touch with their feelings, let's say a John Kennedy perhaps, there was just more charisma coming through because there was more awareness to share. So transparency without awareness doesn't really move people. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, therein lies the difference. Thank you for discerning that. And I'm so glad you brought up empathy. We spoke about this before you and I did. Like your wife, we're both empaths. And for you identify, I didn't know, you said you are an introvert by nature, but you are a situational extrovert. Tell us, Jack, about empathy, the importance of empathy in the new leadership in the new decade.
Well, you know, there's a study done every year where they ask about 2,000 managers and more than that employees about how they would rank order the following things as motivators. And the top three that the employees always say is feeling in on things, an understanding attitude, and there was a third one, appreciation. The managers rank those as the bottom three. Yeah. They said there would be, you know, amount of pay, opportunity for advancement, you know, those kind of things. And so people want to be understood. And that understanding attitude comes from having empathy. I'm willing to listen to you. I'm willing to hear you out. I'm willing to understand you've got a challenge right now. You know, a lot of people have said things like, you know, I know you're pregnant, but suck it up. We have to get this year-end thing done. And this woman's about to go into labor. You know, it's like, that's not empathic. And the other thing is people will often have great insights to improve the company, to help the cause that we're trying to, you know, promote, sales, production, whatever it might be. And the leaders don't listen. You know, it's kind of my way or the highway. And so research has shown that when the leader is a listener and they listen to all the input and then they take that input, they're much more informed to make a better decision. One of my friends is a consultant for the Ford Motor Company. He works with, you know, the CEO of Ford Motor. And all of his clients are Fortune 100, you know, company executives. And he does this process where he's teaching them to ask people for advice. So most leaders don't want the followers to know they don't know something. So they're afraid to ask them. And so then it'll make me look like I don't know. And so, and if you challenge me, it also can confront my belief that I'm not enough. I don't know enough. And so like my wife for years, I'd say, you know, remember to, get gas. Your car's low. It's on almost empty. And she'd go, what do you think? I'm stupid. But she had this limiting belief that came from her childhood that she was stupid. Now she's not. She's one of the smartest people I know.
Jeff, we have about 2 minutes.
Okay.
We have about 2 minutes. So I just want to open that up and just let you know.
Okay. So I'll just end with this, that basically when leaders ask their employees for input and listen, they're much more effective. And when they listen to their employees' feelings, then the employees have loyalty. They don't need like raises. They don't need all that. They would never work anywhere else because the culture is so encouraging.
That's Jack Canfield.
Thank you. Thank you, Jack. I wanted to ask you, one time I heard you say from the stage, no woman should move like anything less than a queen. Do you recall that? Can you expand on that, please?
One minute.
Two things. Number one, when you stand up straight, people respond to you. We also know that when you move your body, it affects your attitude. And so if you stand up straight, you have more confidence, you have more auxiliary energy going out, you're more charismatic. And I think every woman needs to own their divinity. Every woman is a potential queen. Every man's a potential king. And we're meant to live in that divine royal relationship with each other.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jack Canfield, Dana Terrio, our beloved audience. Thank you, everybody. Happy holidays. Happy holy days. Till next time.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank
you. You've been listening to the Cornelia Stephanie Show, Lady Boss, Women Inspiring Women, featuring leading edge entrepreneurs who are putting the focus on empathic leadership in today's modern day world. Text the word Cornelia to the number 22828 and receive her weekly newsletters. For more information on Cornelia Stephanie and her extraordinary work, or to listen to past shows, go to corneliastephanie.com.